SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebick.com as well. Midweek and a big news day. You wouldn't think that Tuesday was going to produce the kinds of headlines that it did, but it managed to. And some rumors came to fruition yesterday with the press release, the announcement that Kentucky Downs is going to change hands. And the story here is going to be, I imagine, immediate concerns that, you know, the tenor of Kentucky Downs' player-friendly concept and execution, you know, might be upset. I don't think that given the people involved, I don't think we have to worry about that. The conversation, I'll just give you the top line, because Corey Johnson is going to join us in about 40 minutes, and Corey will explain the ins and outs of this decision. And I think a lot of this gets to the, I don't want to call it a fight, but let's call it a a grapple for the Oak Grove license that the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission is considering. And while we were in Louisville for the Breeders' Cup, there had been, you know, the KHRC consideration of the license. They put it off. There's some complaints and some concerns about members of the commission that have potential conflicts of interest in the decision-making, and whether they'll, you know, those parties might recuse themselves from decision-making. But in terms of a powerhouse entity stepping forward and acquiring Kentucky Downs, Ron Winchell and partner Mark Falcone, they've created an entity going by the KRA moniker, not Korea, the Kentucky Racing Acquisition LLC. And Ron Winchell obviously needs no introduction. Mark Falcone is going to be familiar to gaming people from his days at Red Rock and at Station Casinos. And although we're not on tomorrow live, we're doing a best of when we get to Rich Eng. Rich certainly can give you more background on Mark Falcone. And Gaming Today covering this story, certainly from Las Vegas. And it would seem to me, and Corey will flesh this out, it would seem that having a gaming executive like Falcone and a business executive like Ron Winchell, the intent here is to make a concerted effort when it comes to that Oak Grove license. And, you know, given the proximity, you know, the region from Nashville up to Kentucky Downs, and, you know, the layout and the concerns that Kentucky Downs had about this Oak Grove facility in general, that would be a seemingly a natural for Kentucky Downs and for this new entity to get this license, but they're going to be fighting with Churchill and and Keeneland over this. So it's a very interesting development. And this had been, there had been whispers that that Corey and his partners were ready to sell, and we'll find out more when Corey Johnson joins us after Pete Fornatel, our first guest. So that was a headline, obviously, that started to make the rounds yesterday afternoon, and we'll consider the fallout and where things go from here. Meanwhile, when it came to the sale yesterday at Keeneland, there was a bit of a bidding battle that took place over a once raced horse, Federal Case. This was the Rudy Brissett trainee for Windstar, and what, about 3 weeks ago, maybe, but whatever, during Keeneland, broke a maiden, and you know, it looked good doing it, and Windstar offering up Federal Case as a gemologist, offered him up in the sale, and $650,000, giving the session a big boost. Jacob West signed the ticket for the Lowe's, Bob and Luana Lowe. And we know that, you know, Rudy Brissett, we talked to him in proximity of the start, and there was Federal Case, and there was somebody else. There was another lightly raced or unraced horse, and I guess maybe it was Federal Case that Brissett cited. I think it might have been. Todd Pletcher, who, of course, you just heard from minutes ago. Just literally, if you were listening to the replay, if you listened to Todd, and he might not have known. He was down in Florida. He might not have known that he was going to get this horse, but he's going to. So you'll see, I imagine you'll see this horse potentially turn up at Oaklawn, and the concept or the ideal scenario is for Federal Case to find his way to Oaklawn, and we'll see. A lot was made of Todd Pletcher having mostly good young turf horses this year for two-year-olds. This could be a very good dirt horse entering the barn. And you know, for a horse to fetch $650 at this time in the sale, that's a big boost. So that was the highlight yesterday. Also, you had on the headline front, you fold in the Cartier Awards. Nick Luck will join us on Friday, the third hour. We'll catch up with Nick, and he's busy. Cheltenham is on the docket over there, and after he finishes the race day, he'll join us, and we'll get Nick's Breeders' Cup thoughts, and we can also touch on the hardware that was handed out yesterday in London. And Roaring Lion, who I suppose domestic audiences didn't necessarily come away with the highest opinion, but that wasn't fair. This was not his Breeders' Cup Classic Try was not a representative performance for what he is and what he's capable of, obviously. And Roaring Lion is the horse of the year via the Cartiers. And what a haul it was for John Gosden. Unbelievable. Gosden Gosden sending out. He must have gotten. They must have just left him stay on the stage. Just keep handing him trophies. Enable, who was trying to be a two-time Horse of the Year Cartier winner. She's the Cartier winner as older horse. And in addition, who else? Too Darn Hot, that nice two-year-old, Gosden. You got that too. Too Darn Hot. What else? Four or five? Mab's Cross was the sprinter of the year. And Alpha Centauri, three-year-old filly of the year. Obviously, Roaring Lion gets three-year-old male. Yeah, five. There were five awards to Gosden, and only Aidan O'Brien, logically, has ever done that. So we'll catch up on this kind of thing with Nick Luck, as well as get Nick's post Breeders' Cup thoughts. Nick, of course, was so helpful coming in. There's also a sad piece of news that circulated yesterday. Jerry Bozzo, at the age of 98, and just turned 98, actually, just weeks ago. Jerry Bozzo passed, and just an amazing, really, an amazing story. So late in his life, kept winning races, kept breaking his own record as the oldest trainer to win a race at Gulfstream. And he had the nice, we talked to him last, maybe 2 years ago, when he had that nice steak filly, the sprinter. Just wonderful. A World War II veteran, and a remarkable man. Was in the Navy Air Corps. Had held advanced degrees in engineering. He was a fascinating, wonderful guy. Get a chance maybe to talk to Mike Welch maybe on Friday. Be a good opportunity. Thanks. And of course, Veterans Day, Jerry, always acknowledged by horse players and fans down in Florida. Let's take a break. We'll start out with Pete Fornatel. Lots to do this morning at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get five full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for five of today's top tracks. Visit DRF.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfertello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Used to keep it cool, used to be a fool, all about the bounce in my step. Watch it on the news, what you gonna do? I could hit refresh and forget. Used to keep it cool. Should I keep it light, stay out of the fight? No one's gonna listen to me. If I write a song, preaching what is wrong, will they let me sing on TV? Should I keep it light? Is that right?
Back at the races. Coming up on 20 into hour one on this Wednesday, off the turf at Aqueduct, as we kind of speculated yesterday with Andy. And so we'll wait for the scratches in races 3, 4, and 7, including that interesting group of 2-year-olds going a mile in that third race, a race that is worth watching. And there's a bunch of AEs. There's one MTO. That race will hold together. There's a bunch of first-time starters, and you would have to think that, you know, knowing that the, you know, the weather was going to threaten that most of these will stay in. So that includes the expensive Chad Brown, Peter Brandt, Firster, DeMarchelier, so the Dubawi colt. Keep an eye out for those changes in about an hour, hour and 15 minutes. It's a good sequence for the carryover. And, of course, action picks up today as well at Churchill. And we'll talk to Marcus Hirsch in hour two to kick off Fairgrounds season that starts tomorrow, and the Fairgrounds action with the Tom Benson Memorial. Not a big purse, but full field, 50,000, and got 12, and it'll be emotional at Fairgrounds to pay tribute to Mr. Benson. And then the season gets underway in full. And there's actually, I'll talk to Marcus too about, we'll get his Breeders' Cup impressions, but also on Friday night at Delta, there's a couple of stakes. Got the Treasure Chest, which used to be, you know, part of the undercard of the Jackpot and Princess, but pretty good. And then there's also a state bred stake later in the card. So Pete Fornital standing by in Brooklyn. Pete, good morning.
Good morning to you. Pleasure to be here on this chilly Wednesday, but you've got me excited to crack the form and look at some of these aqueduct races for today. Get that going, doing a little work in the office, recording a couple fun podcasts, working on a piece now about the Breeders' Cup betting challenge plays. Going to have some fun later this week doing a time form U.S. takeover of the DRF Players podcast. Going to have David Aragona and Craig Milkowski on to do our last look back at this year's Breeders' Cup, but we'll probably keep talking about it all winter. It's one of those events, but technically our last button-up on the pod. But great to be here with you, Steve, and excited to chat as always.
Well, and certainly the team, the Brain Trust, if you got David and Craig, the time form team, and I know that as part of the, you know, what you might include in that discussion is Craig's interpretation of the figures, because that has been an ongoing discussion literally from, Saturday. It wasn't even, I don't even think they'd run that nightcap. and there was the Chalukyi, and I think there was already the discussions going on about the figs. But Craig's opinion, always terrific insight when it comes to the figure making, and of course he comes at it from a pace side of things, and I'd be anxious to hear what his thoughts were.
It'll be fun, and curious to talk to him about this cool new thing that's going to be happening soon in Timeform US with adding the different grades of condition of turf courses to get a sense of how fast or how slow they are within the given designations. I think that could be a useful tool. Really looking forward to talking to those guys today. And you mentioned the figures. I have queued up, Steve, on my iPhone for future runs, your conversations. I've listened to the beginning of the Paul Matisse one, but got interrupted. And then I know you had a great conversation, from all I'm hearing, with Andy Beyer last week as well. I'll be listening to those via the podcast form, and folks can also check them out on stevebick.com. I think November 8th was the Matisse one, and the Andy one was one of the days right around then as well. I'm sure other folks who missed them the first time around will want to go back and check those out as well.
Well, the Matisse piece, Andy gave the top line of his approach to the days, and then Paul, who was still making his numbers for Breeders' Cup, he was wrestling with some of the issues, and then that conversation, because we talked about Jerry Brown and Thurgraph, Jerry took an interest, and he went and listened to it, and let me know that, he agreed with some things that Paul had said. He thought there were a few things that, in terms of the way, Paul's impressions are of the way Jerry adjusts or breaks out races when it comes to the variant, he explained a few things. Anyway, it's been, I think, a really productive sequence of discussions. And in fact, Dick Girardi, who I had on the other day, really to pay tribute to the late Bob Levy, it also came up with Dick as well. And of course, Dick, a member of the Beyer Associates team.
Sure, veteran pig maker.
Absolutely. So, and a lot of times in the pages of DRF these days, with Andy, retired anyway from the writing portion, Dick very often is turned to for figure making write-ups and more or less explaining things to people when it comes to figs that are tough to make, and they're not all cut and dry.
No, there's a lot of art as well as the science, and for horse players, especially newer horse players, but really any horse player looking to deepen his or her understanding of speed handicapping, which to me is the basis of everything I do, even though there might be not that many plays anymore based solely off numbers because there's so much info out there. But understanding that process of how numbers are made, whether it's by making figures yourself or analyzing those made by others and listening to smart folks like all the ones you mentioned, Girardi, Jerry Brown, Paul Matisse, Andy Beyer, Craig Milkowski, you can learn so much about the process by listening to them talk about how figures are made, that that's going to help you in your handicapping, and just to be able to think in the along the same channels and lines as they do. I recommend it highly, and it's one of the many benefits of being a regular At the Races listener, is getting to come in close contact with so many of those names. So folks should definitely check all that stuff out. When you were talking to Dick, did you talk to him about his play in the BCBC? I still contend that his play was brilliant and that he got very unlucky.
And he was pretty stoic on that front, but yeah, absolutely. And I had I forget at what point it was on Friday that I circled through the Gold Room and down in the parlay, and Dick was punching up. Maybe it was Saturday, but it might have been Saturday, and before things were getting going. But anyway, he was heading to the machine, and I said to him, "Great job yesterday." And he was sitting, near the top of the leaderboard after day one. And as you say, I mean, he has one of the one of those stories that a what might have been discussion, undoubtedly.
Absolutely. He made a bold play on Marley's Freedom, just didn't work out. But I love, and it's one of the things that's come to me looking over these plays, is how now more than ever in this world where everybody's waiting till the end, everybody's waiting till the end, if you can make your big move in a spot where other people are not going to be making moves and get those points then, those points that no one, I say points, they're really dollars, of course, but in the context of the contest, they're still points. If you can get those where other people aren't going to get them, in the economy of the contest, in the ecosystem of the contest, they're worth more, and that's why I like that place so much. And unfortunately, it didn't work out. But I thought it was one to be. I don't think have room to squeeze an analysis of that play into the article I'm writing now. So just wanted to give a shout out for what I thought was creative and good play.
Well, and the Philly and Mare Sprint. Certainly feels like it was. I mean, maybe that race alone is worth a column and a treatment, Pete, because it feels like it was a linchpin race for a lot of people. And Paul Matisse himself, he had Chalon as and Marley's Freedom as co-keys, yeah. And it just so happened that he didn't have it. He needed Chalon or Marley's Freedom, one or the other, to win. And this just shows you, how crazy and how not random. I don't want to say random, but how. How fortune has to smile, basically.
It's a razor thin line, isn't it? And you're absolutely right. There were other players, too. I know my friend, the pro player out of Lexington, Sean Borman, was in a situation where he was everywhere with Marley's Freedom, at least second. And if Marley's Freedom had won, I think would have been up there near the total that Dick Girardi would have had. It's it was definitely a fascinating race, and these plays, which folks can see, I'm assuming you've talked about them some. There's a lot of different ways to access them. I think the way that I'm recommending to people is to go to horseracingdatasets.com, because that's in a searchable spreadsheet form that Robin Howlett put up there, as opposed to having to sift through the PDF. But when you go through and you see just how many potential stories there are, I'm actually somewhat in pain to only have one column a week to write, because I would have last year I would have gotten a week's worth out of this stuff. But it's great to have opportunities, Steve, here and also on the podcast to chat about them and see what we can learn. And folks should feel free to ask questions. Happy to answer them here and or on the podcast. The easiest way to get me a long question is probably just podcast@drf.com. But if you see something that you deem worthy of discussion going through those plays, we've got a winter worth of shows where we can probably squeeze in some more discussion if folks want to continue to talk about them. There's still a lot of meat on the bone.
Well, and this Breeders' Cup, and of course this, the Philly and Mare Sprint, because it was more or less, the most productive in terms of exotics and the race that, you know, that had the most, you know, double digit horses involved in certainly in the trifecta. And I don't think there's any one specific handicapping or playing or wagering lesson to be learned, other than it again points out how it only takes one or two. I mean, for those that are just playing and are not contest involved, we've said for years how the Breeders' Cup is unique in that over the 2 days, one good hit is will carry you. And I was just struck in going through, you know, the not just the top finishers, but even further down, how true that was as well for these kinds of players who are as polished and experienced and savvy as you're going to find. I mean, we had this guy on Friday too with Nick. We did the rehash with Nick Tamaro on Friday, and you know, Nick had, you know, two key hits, and he as well had, you know, kind of the fickle finger of you know, horse placement. I mean, it you know, you realize when you watch the replays too. You watch particularly the Shamrock Rose, and we had Mark Cassie on Monday. You watch the trip and how Errat Ortiz, how everything went right, and you realize very quickly that one, literally one stride, if he had had to, you know, to idle for another stride anywhere during the rally, that Shalom wins.
Yep.
And he's, and Anonymity is maybe second, and he's third, Errat and Shamrock and Marley's Freedom Swar. I mean, that reality completely reshuffles the whole deck on the contest. So, especially because it was early on in the day, and that who knows where people are if they've got that kind of money. And of course, the whole story with Chuck Grubbs himself. I mean, Chuck could have doubled everybody had things broken right for him.
That's
in
right.
A couple
That's
other
right.
Spikes.
He had several bad beat stories, which is amazing. Yeah. from the guy who wins. There is a lot of there was a lot of variance, especially when you're talking about high risk, high reward wagers like the trifecta. And you're absolutely right. The Filly and Mare Sprint. You look at the. When you compare the perfect trip of the winner and perfect ride, I want to give credit. It's not like it was totally random, but there was obviously some fortunate stuff going on there. And to have those other trips on the horses in behind, and you're absolutely right. That could be the difference. That's what's it's what's fun about it to talk about. It's what can be so frustrating in the moment, but it's definitely something worth paying attention to, and a reason to not get some of the axioms come to mind about not being as brilliant as you feel when you win, or as knuckleheaded as you feel when you lose. Sometimes there's a lot that goes into this, and the best players just have to keep putting themselves in positions where they can make a score and hope that that they come out on top. You know, even with the best of it, you can lose over a long amount of time. You've got to keep yourself in the game, allow that long run to happen, and eventually you will get out on top. But it's hard when you're dealing with high risk, high reward wagers or betting environments like contests in general, especially a top heavy one like the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. But so many good stories to come out of it, and you've pointed me to a few more things I'll have to queue up to listen to in podcast form, including Nick talking about his plays. I definitely think players interested in ticket construction are going to want to go look and see how he puts his bets together. Really, really good ticket writing, bet writing, in my opinion. It's something folks can learn from, and it's important to know what we can learn from looking at these plays and what we can't learn. You know, you're not going to learn how somebody makes money every day as a horse player, because this economic environment is so different. and it rewards, necessitates risk in a way that would make you bankrupt in many cases if you tried to do every day. But I do think there are some finer points, certainly in terms of contest strategy, but in terms of the specifics of bet writing, players will get a lot, I think, out of going through and looking at how players construct tickets. And some of the things you'll see will show you techniques you might want to try or things you might want to do, like the Nick Tamaro ones. And then there's other instances where you might see things you don't want to do. And in either case, you're learning something, and it's why I think these plays are such a valuable tool for horse players going forward.
Pete, I've got Corey Johnson joining us in about 5 minutes to talk about the Kentucky Downs sale, the pending sale. But before we break, there was one topic too that I had notated that everybody, whenever I have the winner of a big contest, whether it's NHC or BCBC or any of the minor majors, when we talk about them, and people are always interested in the tools and how these players are handicapping, what methods and what products, and I had a thought, an inkling that that's a topic that we've touched on, but that we should revisit and kind of a survey of
great idea.
The contest players, the tools at their disposal, and what are they going to be playing here in coming days and into the weekend.
DRF tournaments have some stuff going on. We've got opportunities to win into the Horse Player World Series, as well as feeders starting up for the Pegasus World Cup Betting Championship. You can check all that out at tournaments.drf.com. A couple other very quick shout-outs, if I may, from last weekend. Wanted to mention Mark Strife getting it done in the Del Mar contest, Del Mar Fall Challenge, with a big hit in the last race and ending up with $50,000 plus his share of the prize pool. That was pretty cool. We had there was the Bet PTC Challenge online, won by Scott Carson, a name familiar to many contest players, and John Fisher coming in second there. I believe Scott gets a seat to the Pegasus contest as well. And then one other story I just wanted to highlight very quickly. Harris Factor, an 82-year-old, 65-year veteran horse player, won the Public Handicapper Challenge, not this past weekend, but the weekend before. It culminated with the BCC. Shout out to Harris, who wins a seat to the HPWS for that, as well as a year of DRF PPs. Just seemed like a good character, good old-school handicapper. Good to see that name in the mix as well.
Oh, that's very cool. I love it. The game is invaluable for people, frankly, as they age, because it's a puzzle. It mental acuity.
It's sharp.
Yep. It's very, very nice. I love it. Well, Pete, we are hurtling toward the Thanksgiving break. I guess we'll talk to you on Wednesday and into. I can't believe, actually, that we're on it right on top of this, but off next Thursday, Friday, obviously. So a number of good racing opportunities next week as well. And as we say all the time, past Breeders' Cup, NHC seats, they'll start to get like hen's teeth the next 90 days. You better make your move.
Excited to talk to you. I'll be out in San Diego next week, but happy to get up early and chat about all the goings-on. Big weekend next weekend. Should be a lot of fun.
Pete Fornatel, everybody. Looms Boldly and the tournament news drop-down on DRF and, of course, on Twitter. Stay in touch with Pete, and he'll keep tabs on really a variety of topics, as you just heard. We'll take a timeout here and come back. Corey Johnson will join us, and we'll get all the I-dotting and T-crossing involved with the Kentucky Downs sale. And Ron Winchell, who certainly, when it comes to the breeding and racing side, is prominent and in this incantation becoming obviously prominent on the venue management portion. And we'll find out everything that went into this. Corey Johnson next. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get five full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for five of today's top tracks. Visit DRF.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. About 20 minutes or so to top of the hour. Sid Fernando will join us. Sire Watch Pedigree Folk is brought to you by Hill and Dale. Coming up right now, always a pleasure to have Corey Johnson join us. And really, we've tracked the entire cycle of Corey's involvement and his partners in originally the acquisition of Kentucky Downs and then the incredible effort that changed the entire landscape when it comes to really the year-round product in Kentucky with the championing of the historic horse racing machinery. The apparatus helped really just so much in Kentucky, Ellis Park, and then the Red Mile, and now what Churchill's done with the old Spectrum training center, and the news coming yesterday that Corey and his partners will sell Kentucky Downs to Ron Winchell and gaming executive Mark Falcone, new Kentucky Racing Acquisition LLC. Corey Johnson, congratulations on everything that has led to this. I think congratulations are in order.
You bet. But, Steve, when you first contacted me, I thought you were calling me about the tourist filly that we're selling today in about 2 hours, hip 3567 at Keeneland. I thought you were calling about her. The first foal born from tourists. Her mother is the stakes producer, and she's the best-looking foal her mother has ever had. So how about that for a shameless plug?
You can plug shamelessly all you want. Give us the hip number again.
3567.
3567, and of course the wonderful Turf Miler, the sire, and first crop, and good job. I will wish you luck. What barn? Where can they go see?
It's Endeavor Farms consignment, and they do a great job, and that's where she was raised. And you know, I saw Turris win our 1 mile race at Kentucky Downs, and I said,
right,
this horse is special. And then he went on to do great things in the Breeders' Cup Mile. So when I had an opportunity, you know, to breed to him, I went for it, and I'm really pleased with the offspring. So, but it's yes, congratulations, Steve. We are so fortunate. You know, Ron Winchell and Mark Falcone are such great buyers. Ron Winchell owns like over 100 horses, including, you know, a major or big share of Tappanit, Gunrunner. So I just believe strongly that tracks need to be owned and run by people that have an investment in racing, not publicly traded gaming companies. And Steve, you can go all over the country and you can look around and how many of them really do what's right for racing. And I am totally convinced that Ron Winchell loves racing. He wants to do what's best for them. And in my opinion, that's best for Kentucky racing.
Corey, how long had this been in the works? And from the perspective of you and your partners, what made it time to sell?
Yeah, Steve, we were not for sale. There was a very important court case that was pending that Judge Wingate recently ruled in our favor, that the Exacta system is pari-mutuel wagering on historical horse racing. That was very important. About 2 or 3 months ago, Ron came forward and said, you know what, I'm interested. I've actually known Ron for many years because I'm close to the Aspison family, and the Winchells have worked with the Aspison, Steve Aspison and his father Keith, for many, many years. So I've known Ron. I also know that Ron has gaming interests, so he understands gaming. So years ago, I, you know, had a conversation with him about how I thought historical horse racing was going to be very important for horse racing in the future. So they contacted us, and we had some, you know, good discussions on that. And then we received, you know, the positive Wingate ruling, and we signed the definitive sales agreement last week. So that would give you a little bit of history on the situation.
How much does the Oak Grove license play into this, Corey? And what is your expectation? Because I can't imagine that Ron and Mark came into this without a game plan or a plan of attack to get in front of KHRC and to raise the profile and the prospects for the Kentucky Downs licensee to win this battle that is clearly going to come in the next 60 days.
Yeah, it's actually Friday is the commission meeting.
Oh, and they're oh, I didn't realize they were.
They've said numerous times, Steve, that they want to take a deliberate, organized approach to this. And for whatever reason, they just keep moving the deadlines up and up. You know, originally they wanted to, like really any other important gaming license in America, you set the criteria And then there are applicants that come in, and then you judge them off of that criteria as to what's best for the industry. And you spend as much as 6 months analyzing the different applications. Well, this is a totally different process. We were told on September 19th that we had to have our application in by October 1st. And then on October 30th, they voted to make a ruling within 30 days. And I've had commissioners tell me that there's a 12 inches of paper on their desk from the different applications. You have wildly different projections for there. But I will tell you this. I feel very strongly that the thoroughbred horsemen are going down the wrong path. If there's a major casino in Oak Grove, it will cut the handles in at Kentucky Downs. That's obvious. I think anybody understands that. And so if you were to allow a complimentary license to Kentucky Downs, and Kentucky Downs could maximize its efforts to create purses, well, basically by 2022 or 23, you could be generating $30 million a year in purses in KTDF. Now, the horse industry, the Kentucky horse thoroughbred industry, wants to trade that for 50-cent dollars because the way the negotiations are, 50% of the historical horse racing revenues that go to purses will go to thoroughbred. They want to trade 100% dollars for 50-cent dollars. That doesn't make any sense to anybody. So what we're suggesting is that we have a good, solid harness track that can create money for the harness industry and thoroughbred industry, and everybody stays whole. But if you look at, if you want to go into deep analysis, the project in Oak Grove, it's a big casino, will cost thoroughbred industry anywhere from $5 to $13 million a year. And they've just been sold a bill of goods. And so obviously I'm frustrated, but Mark Falcone and Ron Winchell are aware of the facts, and they have actually tried to go out and introduce themselves to different commissioners, and were told last night that there's ex parte communication. They're not allowed to talk to anybody, not even introduce themselves and say, we're the new prospective owners, and we love racing. Not even talking about Oak Grove. So obviously you can tell I'm frustrated. I'm hopeful that the thoroughbred industry will understand these numbers and the commissioners. There's a lot of really good commissioners on the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission, and I hope they'll see the facts and choose the Oak Grove Meadows or the Kentucky Downs application on Friday.
And from every indication you're getting, they will make that decision on Friday?
I hope they delay it because it needs more analysis. But, yes, that was the indication. On October 30th, there were a number of commissioners that wanted them to vote that day. So you can understand what we're up against. But we're just, you know, all you can do, Steve, is have the right compass. And, you know, my compass and the compass of Kentucky Downs is to do what's best for Kentucky horse racing and really the overall industry in America. And that's what our application is based on. We just want to be judged fairly and by the facts.
I can't believe that under a scenario where there's a new ownership group, that there wouldn't be at least an opportunity to, if not revise the presentation, at least meet the new principles. I mean, how can they, if they're reasonably considering these applications, you would think that it would demand a further, you know, further study.
I couldn't have said it better.
Let me ask you this. Are you and your partners staying involved with the new management in any shape and form?
Good question. Good question. Let me back up because I really maybe didn't specifically answer your question about the new buyers. They are aware of Oak Grove, and every indication is they are still committed to our project no matter what happens on Friday. I just want to be upfront. And then concerning ownership, they have actually offered, or we actually asked and negotiated an opportunity to own a sizable piece of Kentucky Downs going forward. And I believe that a majority of our partners are going to take advantage of that. For example, I will, Ray Reed, my co-managing partner will, Bill Kasner will, and I think a number of our other partners will as well. So we will still be involved with Kentucky Downs in an ownership manner.
And obviously, personnel-wise, and the day-to-day operations. And from the quotes from the press release and from Ron, particularly, and knowing that Falcone, has a very established gaming management resume. They're indicating that there's some wider interests. What kinds of, from what has come out of discussions and as part of the negotiations, are you in a position to suggest what long-term plans pending the Oak Grove decision might be?
This could be one of the best developments for racing in America, and they understand historical horse racing. They think it's part of a very successful future for horse racing, and they want to take the Kentucky Downs, let's call it model, and take it to other states and other tracks. It's really exciting. This is a very exciting development for horse racing in America.
Corey, one thing that immediately comes to mind kind of waiting. Obviously, we know what's transpired at Ellis and how successful things have turned based on the money that Kentucky Downs has sent in their direction. And of course, you've also given $500,000 each to Churchill and Keeneland in the past year. But the Turfway equation, we get the sense that and have heard that the Jack properties are maybe in play, the Cincinnati casino. Is there any interest in this new entity buying Turfway and considering that it seems that the Jack personnel aren't following through on the renovation plans and the opportunity that they have to install HHR?
Yeah, a good question, and I really don't know. I don't know if there is an interest in a specific property. I think right now their focus is, fairly strong, and it's just, look, let's get this thing closed. Let's do the best we can with the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission, and, let's move forward on Kentucky Downs. But I do know there is interest. But I would also say that I think the owners of Turfway, I believe they're going to move forward. I think in the next 60 days, you'll hear something very positive out of Turfway. That's about all I can say. But I just think they've had a few delays, but I think they're interested, and I think you'll see some movement sooner than later.
I want to add too that Bill, you mentioned Bill Kasner, and Bill about 2 weeks ago. Might have gotten lost in Breeders' Cup hubbub, but Bill wrote a more or less an op-ed style piece that got circulation, and he, I thought, brought up, and obviously he's got some self-interest, which he admitted, being on the board, Corey, but he really brought up, I think, one of the points, and you mentioned your frustration, given how much risk you endured and what you put on the line, you and your partners, to get started at Kentucky Downs and then see through a series of court challenges and what it's done for the landscape in Kentucky, considering the fact that the Beshear administration, when Governor Beshear had promised activity on gaming, and that never came to fruition. Meanwhile, Indiana, Ohio, West Virginia, and Pennsylvania was strangling Kentucky. And everything that you and your partners did that has really provided balance and stability to the Kentucky circuit, that there should be some reciprocation or some appreciation. No one seems to want to give you dates. Keeneland and Churchill fight you every year on the date topic. There's got to be some manner of acknowledgement of what you and Kentucky Downs have done for the industry, specifically in Kentucky.
You would hope so. And when you talk about dates, even greater frustration is, as you know, they've opposed us. We'd love to run 8 to 10 days. We'd love to build more barns at our place. And they have opposed us, Keeneland and Churchill, on racing any more than 5 days. And then they've used it against us, saying that we don't even care about racing. We don't have a barn area. It's crazy what we're having to deal with on this situation. And all you can do, Steve, is hope that we've got a lot of really good people on the commission, and you just hope that they recognize what we've done, but maybe not as much what we've done. We do have a track record, and we are racing-centric. We're not casino-centric. But look at what we've done. Look at our past performance. And then look at the numbers. Dig down and understand those numbers. And understand that what you're signing up for, if you put a casino in Oak Grove, a casino, big casino, that you're signing up for an actual decrease in thoroughbred purses in KTDF. And I think when you put all that together, we're still hopeful that, you know, we can win the process on Friday.
Well, I needed to have you visit. I know you've got an appointment right here at the top of the hour, so we'll let you go, and we'll watch for what transpires at KHRC, and I'm sure that Frank Angst and Matt Hegarty will be on hand for it on Friday, Corey. But meanwhile, as you say, when you have somebody like a Ron Winchell involved in a scenario like this, it's a positive. The industry needs as many horsemen and stakeholders involved in track ownership and management as possible. It may be a bit of a throwback, but it's always healthy, and we appreciate everything you've done, and we'll see what the next chapter and chapters hold.
Okay. Sounds great, Steve. Thanks for the visit.
Thank you, Corey Johnson, and you can get involved. You can have a piece of Corey's rock when it comes to hip number 3567 later today at about 2 hours at Keeneland, the tourist filly that Corey's going to sell. And he's been involved. He's been involved with a number of breeding opportunities, and was part of the partnership with Nathan Fox at Richland Hills. That's when I first met Corey, maybe close to 20 years ago. Let's take a break, and top of the hour upon us, and more sale and breeding conversation, because Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale, is next. Sid Fernando joins us. Marcus Hirsch, after Sid in this hour, we'll get a glance ahead to NOLA, the fairgrounds, and what is in store there for the 2018-19 season. Would love to get back down to fairgrounds and Louisiana Derby. Mark your calendar right now, March 23rd. March 23rd. It's only 4 months away. And Risen Star, February 19th. So basically the third weekend of January, February, and March. Those are your road to the Fairgrounds Oaks and Louisiana Derby. Those are the three big weekends. And they get started always around Thanksgiving, a little bit, a week early in this case. So we'll talk to Marcus. Seth Merrill later as well. Back after this, Sid Fernando.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.